Two things that are fun 12 months out of the year. Talking Raiders football and tailgating. So let's go with Clay, Vince, and Vinny on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Thanks for being with us here in the second hour. It's Raider Nation Radio here on RNR 920 AM on X. It's the morning tailgate. Vinny Bonsignor, Vince Sapienza, Clay Baker here with you here on a beautiful and perfect Tuesday. We'll get Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports in here in just a minute here. We'll also get your thoughts again up on the text line. Brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, 702-365-9200. People getting in on the conversation, East Bay Raider Gray, as you guys were kind of going back and forth to end the first hour about, you know what, if people are calling it a JV offense, East Bay Raider Gray is a, why then are professional players having trouble executing it? But also, it's interesting to find out, like, all right, what is it about the JV offense? And we'll hear from Ryan Scott Hogue a little bit later in this hour. We'll talk to Jason Fitch in just a minute. But that's the thing. Like, everyone wants the answer to come quickly. But it's going to be more than just one thing.
Well, when he's saying that it's a JV offense, he means that it's easy to defend as an NFL defense, a JV offense. It's not about how simple it is for the offense to run. It's how simple it is for a defense to defend. Now, that's I'm not necessarily seeing that. Because to your point, we haven't been able to really see this offense because there's so much of the offensive coordinator, his arm being tied behind his back because...
I just don't know how you can judge it saying, oh, it's easy to defend when the Raiders can't operate it.
Yeah, and I'm just saying the JV thing means that it's so simple for the defense.
No, I agree with that's what I'm... I think that's the point is you're sitting there, well, it's easy to defend. Well, yeah, anything's easy to defend when the guys aren't doing what you're supposed to
that
do.
That too.
That's not
winning their battles.
And again, this is not a pro Luke Getsy.
No, I'm not. Exactly.
That remains to be seen. It's just telling it like it is. We don't know what it looks like. You know, you can make the argument in years past in covering this Raiders team that they were easy to defend because you knew Derek Carr was going to check it down if his first option wasn't there, right? I mean, that's what we knew.
Yeah.
That was an easy thing to defend. Take away the number one option on every route. He's going to dink it down. Third and long, they're gonna hand the ball.
By the way, in spite of that, they were still averaging 26, 27 points a game. So
fair. But you get what I mean. Like that when people say, it's easy to defend.
Right.
Not really.
No, that wasn't easy to defend.
Yeah, not really.
This is easy to defend.
Yeah, when you're just getting beat one-on-one,
exactly.
That's going to look very easy.
For sure.
You go around the high school circuit right now, the state of Nevada, and you could have former college football players as assistant coaches and head coaches and all these different things. But if you don't have the players to execute, you could have all this scheme and different
That's
things
what
to
we've
play
been
with.
Saying. Exactly.
But if you don't go out and have the players that can win one-on-one battles, it's all for naught.
All right. You hear the strains of the Stradivarius. No. Juilliard grad, UNLV child prodigy, Raider Nation's Grammy winner with Yahoo Sports and Fox Sports Radio, Jason Fitz. He joins us here on the morning tailgate as he does. Oh, we're in a big kerfuffle on the offense, Jason. As you actually had expounded several times in the preseason and the last couple weeks, you're still looking to find that proof of concept for Luke Getsy's offense. All right, that first half was very troubling. The second half even more so. Where do you begin to start making sense of what they're trying to do when they have the ball?
Well, look, I was just listening to the guy's conversation about offense, and like I'll go back to Danny Green. I know basketball is a different sport, but I was sitting there talking to Danny Green. He was talking about one time that while he was playing for Pop, I think we can all agree that Popovich is one of the best coaches of all time in any sport, right?
Yes.
And so he's playing for Pop, and he talked about how they worked all week on this practice thing of the way they were going to execute a game plan. They went into a matchup, and I mean, they were trying, and he's like, we tried. But the fact is, no matter what they were coaching us to do, we weren't capable of executing it because the guys standing across from us were better. And there is some element of we have to remember all day. We can sit here and yell about the coaches all day. The coaches are the ones that are responsible for moving the line of scrimmage. And I'm going to continue to yell and scream that now I've talked to multiple offensive linemen that played at the NFL level, played high-level college football, that have all said the offensive line is a combination of not playing well together and also looks like right now particularly a combination of not all that great. Like there is some question about just the level of play for some of these guys. So what have we seen from the offense? Well, You can't run the football. We know you can't run the football. So now everybody's going to tee off against you, and there's nothing you can do. But if you can't run against Carolina, guys, you can't run against anybody. That is not a great run defense. And now the concern that we have going into this week is now you're taking on a defense that can absolutely swarm a quarterback, and that defense is going to be getting after it because every play they know, they don't even have to worry about the run. You can't run. They don't have to put more in the box. They can just sit there and stop the run. So until the offensive line starts to actually create holes, I don't care who's back there. I don't care if you have Jim Brown in his prime back there. I don't care if you have Barry Sanders back there. Like, if your offensive line can't do anything in front of you, you are up a creek. And so this concept that Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell is the problem with this offense is what's wrong with the way that we cover football in America today, because we want to make it about a quarterback. I don't care if Jesus is behind center. You're still going to struggle if your offensive line can't play.
Yeah, the offensive line can't play. The quarterbacks aren't playing good, or the quarterback isn't playing good either. The defense, 27th in the league, Jason Fitz, surrendering points. They've given up. They're surrendering, 26, 27 points per game. That doesn't help. They got run on. They've got run on for three straight weeks. They had a chance to set a tone on Sunday. The defense did. Defer to the second half. What happens? Andy Dalton sticks it in their ear. And it was bad from that point on all the way through. So there's a collection of fingers to point and areas to point to. I'll say this, and I'm going to ask you this. I've been covering this team since late 2019. That was the worst loss that I've covered for the Raiders, only because it was presumed that they were the superior team. They had the better defense. They had the personnel. The Carolina Panthers were making a quarterback change. Where does that loss, A, rank to you in recent memory? And, B, what do you make of what Antonio Pierce had to say about business decisions?
So I think that it was one of the most painful. And what is that? I think somebody said the fourth time in the last 3 years that the Raiders have lost to a team with a losing record that made a quarterback switch to a backup quarterback the week of. Like, this is so predictable, and fans listening right now have felt this. Mm-hmm. We felt this against the Jets. We felt this against Nick Mullins. Like, we felt this. The reason this one hurts is because that's not supposed to be like a coach is responsible for identity. And you guys know that I've been very, very, very high on a lot of what Antonio Pierce does, but a coach is responsible for identity. And I didn't think Antonio Pierce would ever have a football team that came out flat in the game. That's what they did. And now I'm sitting around, I'm looking, I'm thinking, my God, if we're going to be fair, like, is it Antonio Pierce that creates the culture and identity, or is it Max Crosby, who was obviously a shell of himself in that game? So, like, there was nobody else. Like, you saw big plays, and there wasn't even celebration afterwards. The team just came out flat. And, like, you're not good enough to come out flat. This is a team that's going to be fighting for some opportunity, mm-hmm. I think, by the end of the year, to be right in the playoff conversation. You come out flat against Carolina? Like, how dare you? And now I think there is some element, if we're going to be honest, where – The fiber of the team is who they are this week. The interesting stat on Dan Campbell, and let's remember how hard people were on Dan Campbell when he first got the job there, and the, you know, biting him in the knees and all that BS that everybody kept talking about. But what is important to me is that the Lions won this weekend, which is the ninth consecutive time under Dan Campbell that they have won after a loss. They don't lose two in a row. Like, they come back out with the fire of the gods. Like, there is an element here for the Raiders where you lost an opportunity to get ahead on this schedule. You lost an opportunity to bank a game that you're going to need at the end of the year. You lost, in my mind, an opportunity to really be able to put the nail in and say, hey, we're going to be a team with a winning record this year. Like, now you're going to have to fight tooth and nail for that. So in my mind, what happens here, like Antonio Pierce's conversation afterwards about, you know, people making business decisions. Okay. Like, I respect the hell out of a coach coming in front of the microphone and not holding back. I respect that. But now, man, actions speak louder than words. You just threw an entire team under the bus, right? And so if you're going to say that people were making business decisions and now we're going to, you better. Like, there better be some sort of a tangible difference here. And I mean, we can – Gardner Minshew, you know, I know we'll go back to quarterbacks because that's what everybody goes to. Like, changing quarterbacks has nothing to do with the business decision. Like, changing quarterbacks isn't what Antonio Pierce is alluding to. Mm-hmm. I do think there's a real concern with when Gardner is getting pressured, he ducks his shoulders. He doesn't keep his body up. He doesn't keep his head up. He anticipates hits. I thought he was seeing ghosts against Carolina. I don't think that's a great look. That's not a business decision. Business decisions are guys that aren't playing hard late in the game. Business decisions are guys that aren't trying to tackle. And, man, I thought there were some guys that had a regrettable game throughout the course of that defense. And you're right. The defense underperformed. That was the worst defensive effort I've seen from the Raiders in the last couple of years. given the amount of talent they have, the amount of energy they should have, what is expected of them, it was total trash.
Jason, I want to stay on that point when we, because the business decisions is almost clouding what we actually saw on Sunday, that comment in and of itself. The reaction that the players will or will not have this week, does, I know it's week three. I know we're not even a month into the season, but it feels like this week will characterize this group for the rest of the year, no?
Yeah. I mean, this has got to be a team that comes out. I don't believe in must-win games early this season, but I do believe that the team has to show you who they want to be, right? Like, I, unfortunately, we know the outcome of the game. And because we know the outcome of the game last week, it's easy to say this, but, like, I found myself in that game watching it thinking, man, if they were going to play this flat, I wish they'd sat Max to give him a better chance to just get healthier throughout the course of the season. And if it's a high ankle sprain, he's not going to get healthy anytime soon. There has to be a better next man up mentality when it comes to swarming and energy. I understand that depth was going to be a bit of a concern, and depth is certainly being tested early on in the season, but also depth is being tested across the NFL. We see just a record number of big name players going down every single week. So you kind of got to miss me with that. Like, there's a reason that, you know, you look at these things and say, hey, everybody's got to have a depth chart. So, you know, is there some sort of concern with some of the talent level on the field at times? I think there is, right, when you're getting that deep into your depth. But also, I'm looking for somebody to step up and be a dog. I'm looking for somebody to step up and say, this thing goes through me. And I'm talking about the offense and defense last week. Like, I'm talking about, like, where is that moment where you know that this is the person that, hey, it's third and five, I need a play. It's going to be this, like, just don't get it twisted. Devontae had a bad game. Now, we're not allowed to say anything bad about Devontae. He had two drops in that game, two drops that were consequential in that game. And Epps, who's played really well and has been a leader for this team, and obviously injury is a huge concern for him, but he had a bad game. Like, why is it that every single receiver for Carolina that caught the ball running over the middle looked like Bo Jackson and Tecmo Bowl and nobody could get to him? Like, it's not supposed to look that way. Nate Hobbs, who I think is a very good player and had been high on, Nate Hobbs just got beat over and over and over on skinny routes. Like, what are we doing? So, you know, I think that there has to be somebody that steps up and says, I don't care. Like, it's not going to be me. Like, I don't care if we win or lose. I care about the energy. This isn't a must-win game in the sense that they got to win with wins and losses. There's plenty of season left. This is a must-win game for give a damn. Like, I need to watch the Raiders and feel Antonio Pierce on the field. And if I don't, there's a huge concern.
It's Jason Fitz, Yahoo Sports, here with us on the Morning Tailgate. Go further in what you were trying to say about Max Crosby and the high ankle sprain, because you're right, that is something that doesn't get better throughout the season if you continue to play the high snap counts that Max is used to.
Yeah, and that's the problem, guys, is, like, I mean, you're talking usually a high ankle sprain, best case scenario is a six-week massive recovery process, you know, and we've seen it in college. Alabama really they revolutionized, I should say, some treatment on it that involves surgery and all of these things. Like, you know, I'm sitting here wondering what, you know, we saw this last year with Max with the knee, and we realized by the end of the year, it's just so gutsy. He wants to play so much, and I understand that. But, you know, the question that the organization is going to have is, if you keep putting him out there, are you going to get 60% of Max for the rest of the season? Or do you take the next month and just, you know, put him on the sideline and say, hey, we'll struggle through the next month. But the problem is, you can't sit here as a Raiders team and be 1-5. Like, that's where you got to have trust in everybody else to be able to step up and make that difference. And there's got to be, you know, when you've got no Malcolm Kuntz at this point, and Tyree Wilson still isn't making an impact, and, you know, Christian Wilkins can't do it all by himself. So I think, unfortunately, this is where, you know, you sort of get stuck. And if you're Telesco, you're looking around and saying, man, do we have to look? Do we have to go out on the open market? I was a little surprised. You know, we saw Yannick Ngakoue, somebody that the organization knows well, just added to a practice squad. I think these are the Telesco moments where he's going to have to really look around the league and say, hey, is there somebody else we need to bring in to help with some of this lift? Because if your strength is your defensive line, and right now because of injury, your biggest strength has become a weakness in some ways, my God, like that's not going to give anybody comfort. And we know at this point the offense can't pick up the slack. Yeah, right? I mean, I don't trust the offense to go out there and put 30 points up every week, and it looks like that's what they're going to have to do if the defense can't play better. So this is a bit of a sky's falling moment.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Jason, I want to talk about leadership because I just had a bad feeling in the locker room after the Ravens game. I heard a lot of talk about disrespect. You know, the players felt disrespected, you know, by the national media and I guess fans with you know, where people gauged their chances against the Ravens. And I just felt like there was too much talk about disrespect. And it felt like priorities aren't where they need to be. You got to earn respect. You got to earn faith. You got to earn confidence. Can we put to rest all the disrespect talk once and for all if you're the Raiders and just go out there and prove it? And where do you fall on that when you hear, you know, these little glimmers of hope that the Raiders create, and then all of a sudden here comes the talk about being disrespected, and really that's what you were thinking? Shouldn't you be thinking about stacking together wins and creating that that confidence and that faith in fans? And where do you lie on that when you hear that talk from this type of a team?
Yeah, I do not believe that disrespect, and I hope fans hear this too. I don't think disrespect matters, because at the end of the day, you earn what you earn. And, you know, one thing that I laugh about every single week, every preseason, when people, prognosticators, are like, oh, the Raiders are going to stink, and fans get just up in a, how could you say we're going to finish in last place? And I look at that, I'm like, I understand. But, like, why are you that worked up over it? Because eventually, either they're wrong and the season goes the way you want, you can talk your talk then, or they're right, and if they're right, you don't really want to talk your talk at all. Like, to me, there's this little level of, like, when your organization over the course of the last 25 years has been mostly bad, you got to look around and say, everything we're going to get now, we will have to earn. And so many this is where the hardest part about being a Raiders fan is that we have legacy as fans that we believe in. We have a past that the organization still embraces. But guess what? What happened in the 70s does not matter. Marcus Allen in a Super Bowl when I was 6 years old does not matter. Rich Gannon, Tim Brown, the whole Jerry Rice era does not matter. This team has been bad for so long. So the one thing the Raiders have done consistently over the last 20 years is break their fans' hearts and lose football games. And if you really want respect, the way you're going to get respect is by stopping that. Not having the occasional 10-win season every once in a while that feels like a blue moon, we won the scratch-off lottery. Like, that's not the way you do it. Like, there's a reason that we respect Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers, why he's never had a losing season. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that we respect the Kansas City Chiefs, why they've earned every ounce of it. The Chiefs were bad for a long time. Nobody remembers that now. Why? Because they go out and they win football games. Like, the Lions were terrible. Do you think the Lions get respect now? Yes. Did the Lions get respect 2 years ago? No. Why? Because they hadn't earned it. Mm-hmm. You want respect? Earn it on the damn field. Like, that's there's some element for all of us as fans, too, that we can sit back. Like, this is the time where you just sit back, you watch your team, you love your team, you want your team to be great, you want everybody to love your team. But realistically, you want respect? Man, the Raiders are going to have to put up 10 wins. And not 10 wins once, 10 wins two, three, four, five times. Because right now, all it feels like is happening is the organization, when they win, turns around and talks a lot of talk. And when they lose, it feels like the old Raiders. Like, there is too much talent. There are borderline Hall of Fame players on this team, and there's a real possibility that this season goes off the rails. Man, you want respect. Have the leaders step up. Be leaders. Don't let a game come out flat against the bad Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. You want respect, go out and earn it.
Oh, this is great stuff, man. I'll tell you what, Jason, thank you so much for coming on today. I was like a blowtorch on the airwaves. We appreciate your time. Let's do it again next week.
Can't wait, boys. Hopefully a better one next week. Appreciate you.
Thank you. At Jason Fitz on X.
Somehow I still feel positive after that. there's a positive feel so coursing through the veins right now. Yeah. But an interesting thing he said in one of his answers, you know, I think it was the first time he started to ask the question to himself and hear, you know, is it a talent issue? And I think we had the discussion maybe yesterday or maybe even last week. They all run together. That I said this team was not devoid of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And this team did not lose week three because they
don't
were
have
the
talent.
Inferior talented team.
Right.
But when we talk specifically about how this team is going to get back on track, it's the offensive line. It's always going to go back to the offensive line. No, it's a quarterback-driven league. But what we've seen in the first 3 weeks, I think you would agree with me, nothing matters unless that gets rectified on the offensive side of the ball.
Telling you.
Because as we saw in weeks 1 and 2, Couldn't do it. The defense was able to keep them in the game. When the defense goes the way it went in week three, just getting marched on, and the offense is what it is, it's a blowout, regardless of the opponent. So the starting point to me, and you tell me if you disagree, starts with this offensive line.
I would throw the defensive line in there as well, because they haven't stopped, or end linebackers, they just haven't stopped the
run.
That's
fair.
All right, so yes, but we're basically agreeing here. It starts, and I think I sensed a level of immaturity in that Ravens locker room, a sense of immaturity. And I think that for the Raiders to get right to,
Following the Ravens win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was just immature to me. Like, that's what your focus is right now. You didn't do squat. You played a good quarter against the Ravens, and we all applauded that, and we all gave respect to that effort. But if that's what you're really focused on, you're focused on the wrong thing. Because to get respect, you got to earn that respect by stacking together wins and not just gloating over a good quarter. I get celebrating a win. You should. This is hard to do at this league. But don't start talking about all that stuff. You know, go do it the next week and then the week after that. And as Jason said, after you win 10 wins and you proved everybody wrong, now you can really, truly talk. You have the right to do that. You don't have the right to do it after one good quarter of football. And to me, that's immature. There's an immaturity level to the overall leadership of this team and the mindset of this team. I don't think that it's something that they can't fix. And I wish they would listen a little bit more to Davante Adams. He was the one guy in the locker room who said, doesn't mean we're winning the Super Bowl because we won a quarter. Let's be honest about that. So kind of follow that lead a little bit. But yes, to your point, on the field, unless they get the offensive line, fixed and functioning, and unless the defense, if the defense continues to not be able to stop the run, that's going to be a huge problem. Because the numbers don't lie on the defensive side of the ball either.
Yeah. No, agreed.
Right? And you can't blame all that on the offense. I think that Chargers game.
The reason why I say it starts with the
it
offensive line.
It does to me, too.
Yeah,
yes.
The reason why I say it first and foremost is the offensive line, and the defensive line is a very close second.
Yeah.
Because when the Raiders defense was getting marched on in that second half – in Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
but the Raiders offense finally came to life.
Right.
And they were still, but the Raiders defense were able to bend but not break.
Correct.
What I'm saying is, when it does break, like it broke in Week 3 against Carolina, where they got marched on and they're scoring touchdown after touchdown,
yep.
and the offense is continuing to be the same.
Correct.
We're going to see these same results week in and week out.
Absolutely.
with better talented rosters. And again, all credit to Carolina. They
right.
came in and they smashed the Raiders.
Yeah.
But there's more talented rosters on this schedule for Las Vegas.
Much more.
And if both those parties, I know we say all three phases, Daniel Carlson missed it, another field goal. So 57 yards, still missed it. Usually automatic from that range. But, when you fail in every phase, it doesn't matter who it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get blown out.
Correct.
And he said there's two things that one made me laugh and two made me go, One was when he talked about Bo Jackson, Deontay Johnson looked like Bo Jackson, Tecmo Bowl. Andy Dalton, to me, looked like the guy in Blitz. Remember the old NFL game Blitz when you get on fire and the guy literally turned on fire and the football was a flamethrower?
Right.
That's literally
it's like a comet going through the field.
That was the Red Rifle Sunday at Allegiant Stadium.
Guys were wide open.
Wide open, running past defenders, separation everywhere. There's literally one play I can think of where they defended the slant route properly, and it was a Ja'Cory Bennett third down stop. One.
Yeah.
And they ran the slant
multiple
20 times.
Now, mm-hmm. To give that defense a little bit of a break here, Max is obviously not even close to being 100%. Just look at what he puts on his ankle or had on his ankle. That tells you right there. So it's interesting when you say they're not devoid of talent. They're not. And there's no question that they're not. You look at some of the players on your team like, wow, those are good players. But the problem is they don't have enough talent
to overcome mistakes,
right, or an injured Max Crosby, and on top of
Marcus Epps
and Malcolm
Kuntz, yes,
right. So that's
now all of a sudden a talented defense is looking really, really thin. Divine Diablo, say what you want about his missed run fits in the first couple weeks, He was clearly missed on the field in week three.
No question about it.
He was clearly missed. His range, his athleticism in sideline to sideline, his length. I mean, how many times did Andy Dalton drop a dime right over the head of Robert Spillane in a position that typically we would probably see Devine dropping in coverage because of his length? Mm-hmm. And
you would have a younger player like Masterson biting in on a play action fake.
And there's one other thing I want to say about what Jason said, and to me it was very astute. And now that I think about it, it makes me go, huh. The Gardner Minshew play to Trey Tucker, 54-yard completion. Biggest play of the season in terms of yardage.
Yep, right.
Explosive. You talk about, and you could argue, timing of the game. Like, they're back in it. They're down 14-7, 54-yard, or 7-0.
Yeah, after punting on their first drive, for sure.
54-yard bomb, no reaction. There was not a lot. You talk about, that's why we say they came out flat. There was a lifeless feel to it. There wasn't that same exuberant kind of like, every play, get up off your feet. No, I mean, I know he was 54 yards down the field, but the following play, Zamir White has his biggest run of the day for 9 yards. Just kind of gets up, everybody walks. There wasn't that same.
Yeah, they didn't have that pop.
Celebrate every single moment. I mean, even the Alexander Mattison, you know, it was a delayed call if he was in or not. But, you know, just hands kind of up, pat on the helmet, and it was back to the thing. It wasn't like what we saw in training camp when every time the offense did do something, they were acting like it was the game-winning drive.
Right.
Part of that plays into a lot of the things Antonio Pierce was saying in terms of flat, didn't have the juice. But again, that's on Antonio, right? That's what he brings. That's his biggest thing he brings to the table, is that you're never not going to have that lack of juice.
Right, I agree. And you know, that's where, you know, the devoid of talent, the talent. But there's something to be said about a mindset. And we talked again about how they got to follow that blueprint, and that also means approaching every game the right way. They're just not talented enough to not check off that box as well, and they obviously didn't, you know, against the Carolina Panthers. So there's definitely got to be some soul searching and figure out that they have no business talking about disrespect or overlooking any opponent or not coming correct in every single phase, because that's what they have to do. Hey guys, I want to talk about our new friends over at Milano Nail Lounge. They are located at 3458 St. Rose Parkway in Henderson, Nevada, right next door, not next door, but right around the corner from the Raiders practice facility. Milano's is the biggest lounge in town, featuring a 4,000 square foot, that's really big, facility and a support staff of 20 talented professionals. They do everything, manicures, pedicures, acrylics, gel X, hard gel, hybrid gel, dipping, facials, lashes, and waxing services. And right now they are offering a 20% off promotion for all NFL, Raider fans, sports fans, and an extra 20% discount on gift cards. Whether it's for yourself or as a gift for somebody special, make sure you get over to Milano Nail Lounge in Henderson. Ask for Tony and tell him Vinny from the Morning Tailgate sent you. Their phone number is 724-204-7384. That's 724-204-7384. Or you could go online, book your appointment online at MilanoNailsLoungeNV.com. That's MilanoNailsLoungeNV.com.
Getting your thoughts up on the text line, 702-365-9200. Back here on Raider Nation Radio, Vince, Vinny, and Clay. And a lot of thoughts coming in on the text line about Jason Fitz's interview. Storming the Bastille. Yeah, like what he even said about, you know, coaches are responsible for identity. And so if you're beginning to really question the inner structure of the team and the heart, the identity takes a blow. And this is going to be a very interesting week for the Raiders, especially as they start to reassemble themselves to get back in to go and face a Cleveland Browns team that is stinging from a nasty loss against the Giants. Q Myers with Unnecessary Roughness spoke with a former Raider, Mr. Irrelevant from the 2003 draft, the final pick of the Oakland Raiders back then, Ryan Scott Hogue. This was an interview that was brought up by one of our callers, Raider Greg, kind of talking about, perhaps it was Robert in San Jose, about, all right, how does this offense look to the outside world. This is from the interview from yesterday.
Some changes need to be made. Is there something that you see, you identify, that you think could be a change that the Raiders could make within their team, obviously the personnel that they have, that could help kind of get this team jump-started and get them away from what they did yesterday?
Yeah, you know, I get really frustrated when people immediately go and blame the quarterback. Did Minshew play great? No. Was he the reason we lost? Absolutely not. You're putting lipstick on a pig if you make the change now. As soon as we finally got him confident, and after that moment in Baltimore and the whole Max Crosby interaction, and everybody was feeling, you know, positive, and Minshew was number two in the NFL with yards, and now the narrative of the fans, of the media, to like putting Aiden O'Connell in is going to change the trajectory of this team. I disagree with it wholeheartedly. I do not think that is a place you should go. That would be one of the last places I would look at changing in terms of personnel. I think from a philosophical standpoint, right, I don't know that we are doing justice for the team that we have from a play-calling standpoint. I feel like defensively, our defense is predicated on our front four generating pressure. Obviously, we're thin at different positions now, especially on the other side of Wilkins and Crosby, and that's created some, you know, less than fortunate responses because we haven't been playing very well opposite those two guys up front. And, you know, it's clear that Max Crosby is hurt and he's playing at a 50% level. That's good enough, but it's not going to do what it needs to in that defense, which is predicated on, hey, we got to get this ball out of the quarterback's hands soon. We didn't get exposed in those first two games. In this game against an offensive line that actually is pretty good, and we talked about that, the problem has been the Bryce Young factor, not the fact that their offensive line is bad. And they won up front, and we got exposed in the back because our guys are kind of just anticipating that ball coming out early. We had watched it on film. We were watching the wrong person. We were watching Bryce Young. This isn't Bryce Young. This is a 10, 12-year vet that's been to a Pro Bowl. He's going to make plays. On the flip side, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah, and then on the flip side of that, offensively, right, you got we have this offense that, and we've talked about it, right, we're not scripting for success. You look at Minnesota, right, before the season started, I don't know that many people were saying that Sam Darnold is a better quarterback than Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew, right? I mean, he had been left for dead, and everybody wanted J.J. McCarthy to start over him and this and that. Well, guess what? They're putting him in positions to succeed. They're making each play look the same, and they're running wrinkles off of that, right? I want to see us mix things up, right, and give our quarterback some easy reads from the start. I want to do some different packages. Why not play an unbalanced line and see what the defense does? Why not do some early, formation shifts? Put different guys in, right? Play with three tight ends and spread our guys out and see which, you know, linebacker is going to cover Bowers or Mayer on the outside, and then give us these defenses are just begging us to throw it deep, knowing that we're going to get the ball out quickly because we don't protect really well. And then our offense of scheme is so simple. Our play calls are just little stick routes and slant routes. I mean, it would be the easiest to defend as a defensive coordinator. I would say, okay, here's the deal. We know Devontae is that dude. We know Bowers is that dude. But guess what? They're not going to beat us over the top. They haven't really thrown anything deep, right? That's why Trey Tucker got that one throw. But other than that, like, we're running man beaters into zone schemes and zone beaters into man schemes. I would love to see us give Minshew two plays in the huddle and have a check with me system. Like, very rarely do you see, you know, maybe occasionally we'll do an alert, right? But maybe that's just changing, going from a run from the right to the left. I want to see us get a couple different plays in the huddle, and depending on if it's a zone or man beater, you're calling that, and then you're switching it to that. And I see none of that. I see us running just this JV Harry high school offense, and it's so predictable, and it's not setting a quarterback up for success.
That's Ryan Scott Hoag, former Oakland Raider and analyst and host of his own right. All right, is there something to be said about the way the quarterback's not being set up for success, the way he used the example Sam Darnold is in Minnesota?
Yeah, well, number one, the Vikings offensive line is superior right now. He kind of buried the lead there because he eventually said it. They're not protecting well. So that obviously doesn't help. That's where I go. It looks like a JV offense. There's no question about that. And, but it's hard to judge it right now because they're not protecting. They're not getting the job done up front. So we don't know. And it feels to me like because of that, the offensive coordinator is kind of grasping for straws to kind of figure out what it is that they can actually pull off with an offensive line that's just not getting the job done. And so it probably does look to an NFL player like a little bit of a JV offense right now because they're not really able to get into their bag of tricks because there's nothing that they have been able to do consistently well. And to your point earlier, Vince, a lot of that starts along the offensive line.
Have you ever been to a game, college, football, hockey, anything? You look up on the Jumbotron in between timeouts or things like that, and they'll put an image, a blurred image, on the screen. They want fans to guess what it is as it slowly comes into what it is. That's what this is to me. This is what this Raiders offense is to me. It is a giant blur. We do not know. How can anybody say this is what Luke Getsy's offense is when you're looking at a blurred vision of this offensive line? I would love to have the discussion. And I would love to critique or praise or what a compliment, whatever it is, to see what this offense looks like, the decisions Gardner Minshew does or does not make when he has a compliment around him in terms of the offensive line. It's Vinny Clay, it's very difficult to sit there and be like, man, Luke Getsy is just not calling a great game right now. And you sit there and you do the opening drive. Antonio Pierce says, we are going to run the ball. We are going to run the ball until we run the ball, right? That's what he said. He said it for how many weeks now? Mm-hmm. Dating all the way back into the summer. Opening drive, down 7-0. You ran the ball twice.
Right.
You throw an incomplete. You're 3 and out. You start the second half saying, no matter what the score is, Antonio Pierce says, no matter what the score is, we're running the ball. What does he do? Runs the ball twice for 6 yards. Incomplete pass, third down, or 3 and out.
Mm-hmm. 5 3-and-outs throughout that whole game.
This offensive line continues to be the starting point if you're picking up the pieces, if you're putting this back together. If you want to see a complete picture of what this Luke Getsy's offense is in Las Vegas, it starts by getting a clear picture of the offensive line and not seeing this blurred vision of rotating linemen in. You know, just getting beat on speed rushes or bull rushes. Again, I would love to tear apart what Gardner Minshew is or is not doing. I would love to compliment the decisions he is or is not making. What does it matter if he has 3 plays in the huddle to choose from if none of them are going to be blocked? That's kind of where I'm at this point. And while I respect what he's saying and get what he's saying on Q Show, I get it. But it's tough to fully sit there and say, well, this is so easy.
By the way, the Vikings, Christian Darrisaw, first-round pick, tackle. Garrett Bradbury, their center, first-round pick. Right tackle, Brian O'Neill, second-round pick, 30th pick overall in the draft. I mean, the Vikings made an there's a huge, huge disparity right now between what the Vikings' offensive line is and the Raiders' offensive line is, and really, if we're being honest, this is the best supporting cast that Sam has had, including coaches. And I'm going to give Kevin O'Connell and that whole staff their credit and their flowers. But he also has a very good offensive line that was invested in wide receivers. They haven't gotten their tight end yet. Aaron Jones is playing. The run game is humming. So there's how much of that is scheme? I don't know compared to talent. I know that the Vikings offensive line in terms of investment is much further along than or just much higher than what the Raiders is. So it's hard. I know that the easy blame is Luke Getsy, and maybe ultimately that is what's deemed the biggest part of the problem, but when I look at this offensive line right now, they're not getting it done, and they've been okay the last few years, but it's not like they were a juggernaut last year in the run game, and obviously the passing game wasn't happening. That's why the coach was fired, for crying out loud, right? So, yeah, a lot of that, to me, I'm right there with Vince. Till you get this offensive line squared away, it's hard to judge the offensive coordinator.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Vinny, Vince, and Clay on Raider Nation Radio.
Wrapping up hour number two here on the Morning Tailgate, continuing the conversation of this Raiders offense, where you start picking up the pieces. Oh, man, starting to get hungry.
Didn't take long.
Starting to get hungry.
Preston Room. I'm just saying, Saturday night, 5 o'clock.
I know.
Come on by.
I need to get there.
No more excuses.
That's true. I know that's true. No, that's a good point. You got to call me out on those things. I want to continue this conversation that we were having, and we'll keep it going into hour number three, and we're going to continue to take your calls going into hour number three. So please, 702-365-9200, we want to hear from you. So doing a little digging with my cohorts here, colleagues, besties, if you will. And, you know, Luke Getsy is kind of the eye of the storm right now in terms of the nation and, you know, how this offense jolts up. And I made the argument, Vinny, I think you agree with me. Clay, I think you're on the same page as well. I look at this as a blurred picture in terms of the offense of what it really is. Because until the offensive line is fixed or at least in an average position, it's tough to get a clear picture.
Yeah.
Now,
how can you understand a book if you can't get through the first page?
There you go. And so people are commenting, and hey, we're welcome to all kinds of comments. But they're saying, well, you obviously didn't watch Luke Getsy in Chicago. Well, it's just more of the same from Luke Getsy in Chicago. Well, when we dig up the numbers, last year in Chicago, the offensive line graded out, according to PFF, 19. Mm-hmm. 19 out of 32. That is bottom half. That is below average.
Below average.
So when you talk about, and I use the term one hand behind your back, how can you properly, if you're not average at it, and I get 19, you know, 16, I get it's right there. But when you're in that back half and you don't have a proper feel, and a lot of it goes to talent. Like, do you have the talent to properly show off what you can do? I would argue this Raiders team has more talent than last year's Chicago Bears team.
And people,
are we on the same page there?
Yes. And by the way, real quick, people will point to, well, the Pittsburgh Steelers have figured out Justin Fields.
Yeah.
They're averaging 2 points less than the Raiders.
Let facts get in the way of a good story, Vinny.
So let's you know, kind of push the brakes on that. They're winning because they know how to – they're a mature team that knows how to win football games. They're 3-0 because they know how to put it together and win football games and be complimentary and a defense and timeliness and all that, the things that good winning teams do. So they're winning, but it's not like their offense or Justin Fields is so much better than what the Raiders are doing offensively.
Now, very quickly, as everybody sits there and listens and thinks, you know, we're protecting Luke Getsy, we're not protecting anybody from anything, but we are simply stating what we're seeing, one, and now we're backing up with stats saying, if you're going to go back to Chicago, you have an equally as bad offensive line graded out in terms of, so we don't know how good. Now, the onus is on Luke Getsy to get it right.
Right. Figure it out.
And you got to figure it out. I don't care what the talent level is in that offensive line room. At this point, you have what you have. So now, fix it. That's the onus. Now, I don't care what kind of route combinations, what kind of scheme you're coming up with Brock Bowers and Devontae. Fix the offensive line because that's where it starts.
Agreed.
The onus is now on him. The players are what they are. If that's what we're saying week three into the season going into week four, you saw them all training camp. You know what the deficiencies were. You know what they were good at. Now it's on you to fix it. Now you have to fix the offensive line. It's not getting Brock Bowers 2 yards deeper in his routes. That's not the issue right now.
And I don't care what it is that you want to do. You got to figure out a way to do what you can do, what you're capable of doing.
702-365-9200. Coming up next, your thoughts on both the text line and on phones. It's the Morning Tailgate.